Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
They called me from headquarters early that morning and told me that the scouts up here had found a dead girl. And when I got here, to my surprise, there was three, and it was a homicide.
Two of the girls were from Tulsa, and one of the girls was from Broken Arrow. And I think it sort of shocked the entire area, you know, that three Girl Scouts could come out here for a peaceful encampment and be sexually murdered.
One of the fondest memories I have as a kid is camping with my friends and family. I was never in the Boy Scouts, unfortunately, but I had my fair share of outdoor adventures growing up. Some of the best memories of your life can be made during the summer, while away at camp. Though it does seem that not every story from summer camp ends in fond memories that last a lifetime. Some stories are memorable for a more sinister outcome. Camp Scott is a Girl Scout camp located not far outside of Locust Grove, Oklahoma, in Mays County. In 1977, the camp was celebrating its 49th year as a camp, and spirits were high. Camp Scott is situated on 410 acres of land with multiple creeks running through it. Highway 82 is not too far from the area as well. Now that we are acquainted with the area a bit, let's get right into the tragic and disturbing story of the Oklahoma Girl Scout murders. June 12, 1977, marked the first day of camp for the Camp Scott Girl Scouts. That same day, around 6 p.m., a nasty thunderstorm hit the area. All the girls went to their tents and tried to stay dry and warm. Among the campsites, there were 7 tents for the scouts, a kitchen and shower, and a tent for the counselors, as well as a campfire. The campsite in particular we are going to be focusing on is the Kiowa site. Among the scouts at this site were Michelle Gusey, Lori Lee Farmer, and Doris Milner. The three were sharing tent number 7 on the furthest edge of the site. Sometime during the night, tragedy would strike. The next morning, a counselor walking a trail came upon the three girls dead in their sleeping bags, their bodies placed at a fork in the trail. Before I go any further, I must note that 2 months prior to the camp opening for camping season, a camp counselor had reported that her belongings had been ransacked and, oddly enough, her donuts stolen. Inside the donut box was a note, though. This note has inspired many crime movies and TV shows, like American Horror Story's recent season. The note read that the author vowed to kill 3 campers. This was, of course, discarded and thought to be a joke. As summer camps are usually full of ghost stories, pranks, and generally comedic times. Now, getting back into the story. June 13th, 1977 would not only mark the darkest day in Camp Scott history, but it would also mark the last day the camp would ever be open. After just under 50 years of operating as a Girl Scout camp, the area remains abandoned and empty, even today. After a counselor was on her way to the showers, she discovered the bodies of Michelle, Lori, and Doris. Counselors quickly found one of the tents had been cut with a knife. The girls were found to be violated and died from strangulation. Their bodies were left out in the open, less than 150 yards from help. A rather large red flashlight was found on top of the campers' bodies. A fingerprint was found on the lens, but it seems it has never been linked to anyone. A bloody footprint from a 9.5 size shoe was also found in the tent. It seems the previous two red flags were written off at the time. I guess I can see why they would be. There are more alarming clues that would be written off, though, that really concern me. Apparently, a counselor in another unit not too far from the Kiowa site saw what looked like to be a dim flashlight moving through the woods sometime between 9 or 10 p.m. This is obviously a bit concerning due to how remote the area was, but being as cell phones and the like were not really around, there wasn't much anyone could do to verify who that light belonged to. Now, this next part should be taken with a grain of salt, as I could not verify this next piece of speculation. But, from what I've read via a post on the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit, a counselor from the Kiowa site apparently reported that they also saw a dim flashlight approaching their direction at around 1 or 2 a.m. This person was approaching the area very slowly, according to the claim. I couldn't find the article this user claims they read this in, though. But, honestly, I really feel terrible that the counselors, who were mainly around the age of 18 at the time, had no real way to defend their campers. The last concerning thing I would like to mention that seemingly was overlooked in this case was that in the early morning hours, the two Kiowa site counselors were awoken by some commotion going on in one of the tents. They heard a guttural sound, likely one of the girls being killed or violated. The counselors were startled but brushed it off as an animal or something like that. It is often brought up that if even one of the counselors went and checked on the noise, that maybe a life could have been saved. I do personally find this to be a bit unfair, seeing as most of the counselors were just kids themselves.
His mother's property was very, very close to the Girl Scout camp location, the Camp Scout location. And in this massive effort to uncover evidence, part of it would have involved items that were taken from the Girl Scout camp the same night as the homicides occurred. Some of these were found in a location called the Cellar Cave. And the Cellar Cave was attached to Gene Leroy Hart during that period of time as a hiding place while he had escaped through a, there was a witness who had put him there. But there was also physical evidence in the cave that not only tied him to the cave, the Cellar Cave as it was referred to, but also in that sense tied him to the items that had been taken during the same evening or night of these crimes.
There was a suspect that came to attention of authorities. This suspect's name was Gene Leroy Hart. He had been at large since escaping the Mays County Jail in 1973. He had been on the run for nearly 4 years after being convicted of kidnapping and violating two pregnant women, as well as 4 counts of first-degree burglary. Gene Hart was born and raised only about a mile away from Camp Scott. Gene was of Cherokee descent and was eventually arrested at the home of a local Cherokee medicine man. He was put on trial in March 1979. Although local perception seemed to be skewed about Gene's involvement, even though the local sheriff pronounced that Gene Hart was 1,000% guilty, a local jury acquitted him of the charges. Later that year in June, Gene Hart collapsed and died while working out in the prison exercise yard. In 1989, DNA testing had been done, and it found 3 of the 5 probes matched the DNA of Gene Hart. This doesn't mean Gene was the killer, though. This would mean Gene was one of 7,700 potential people that could have committed the crime, which is why these DNA tests were found inconclusive. In 2008, a new set of DNA testing was conducted on the stains found on a pillowcase. These results sadly proved inconclusive because the samples were too deteriorated to obtain a DNA profile. Just recently, in 2017, somewhere around $30,000 was raised by the local sheriff, Mike Reed, in order to do new DNA testing with the stronger technology we have available today. Unfortunately, I have not been able to find any results from these tests. It would be unfair to mention that many do think Gene Hart may have had something to do with it, but he did not act alone. Many speculate that the crime scene shows that one person could not have done this. I also see the counter-argument that a full-grown man wouldn't have too much trouble subduing young girls between the ages of 8 and 10. Either way, the killer remains at large and is potentially free to strike again. Sadly, this is where the story comes to an end. At least for now. That is, Richard Gusey, Michelle's father, has gone on to help the state legislature pass the Oklahoma Victims Bill of Rights. He also was one of the founders of the Oklahoma Crime Victims Compensation Board. Sherry Farmer, Lori's mother, founded the Oklahoma chapter of Parents of Murdered Children, which is a support group for families struggling with the loss of a child. At the end of the day, this is a tragic and violent crime that should have never happened. No matter who you believe did this crime, it is almost impossible to not stop and scratch your head. How could so many red flags go so ignored by the camp staff? How could anyone possibly want to hurt innocent children? It is all so sad, and the families of these three young girls deserve closure for their pain. If you have any information or tips that could help authorities further this case, please send them in to Mays County Sheriff's Office. You can find links to information on this case and contact details in the description down below.
The OSBI, the lead agency in this investigation, refuses to comment on this case because it is still considered open. However, the agency has never made another arrest.
I was asked the question, now are you going to go out and try to find the real person? And of course, they try to explain, well, based on what I know about the case, based on the evidence, they had the real person, you know.
I don't believe any DNA testing was used for court purposes prior to 1987.
A decade after the trial, investigators still wanted answers about Hart. They hoped a new technique called DNA testing might help. Three of the five tests run on material found at the scene matched Hart's DNA, but still, it was not enough to be conclusive.
Thanks for watching this documentary on the Oklahoma Girl Scout murders. This case has really tugged at my heart for a long, long time. I haven't covered a case like this in a long time simply because covering children cases really does hurt. It's really hard to cover cases with so much violence against kids who never even had a chance at life. I have covered some other Girl Scout murders in the past, like Margaret Peggy Beck, which recently got solved. So it is my hope that we can help solve this one. If you have any information, please send it forward to the authorities. If you enjoyed this documentary, please hit that like button as it does help me out a ton. I am always working on new documentaries and trying to get out cases that don't get too much coverage. If you have any cases you would like to suggest me to look into, please comment them down below. If you're new to the Swamp, why not join us? Hit the subscribe button and turn on notifications to never miss a new video. I upload them every single day, and all things natural and supernatural. If you don't know, you can download your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about everywhere else you find podcasts. Thank you guys so much for supporting these videos the way you do. I couldn't be doing this without you. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.